and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us want to geek out, freak out, and rule the galaxy as father and son. I am one of your hosts, Cannon MacArthur, and whom am I joined by?
You're joined by... not your son. Cannon, you aren't my father.
What do you, I could cut off your hand and then tell you otherwise if you want, like on Cloud, standing above a big pit in Cloud City. Would that make you love me, son?
Could you replace it with a robotic hand later?
The rebellion to the Empire can.
Good enough with me?
I'm sure they got plenty of robot hands lying around. Cool. Well, on the discussion of fathers, Cole, you have a dad, right? Not me?
Yes, I do. I would say he's done this podcast with us before.
He has done this podcast with us. He talked about cryptids with us. Go check out that episode.
I'm scared on why you're asking about fathers. I mean, I assume Father's Day is coming up, but...
Father's Day is coming up, yes. That is a relation to the subject. Huh, relation, funny. Cole, you know my dad, right? We're not going to talk about our dads the whole time. But I figured Father's Day is coming up.
Your dad, great dad. The best fact I know about Cadden's dad is he has a pair of sticks, drumsticks, in his car that he has in like a little pocket on like the edge of his seat that at any point he can pop out and immediately start like banging out a random marching snare beat on the steering wheel.
That is true. My dad, to anybody who doesn't know in the audience, and why would you know, my dad was both of our high school band directors, and my dad is mainly a drummer, among other things, but mainly a drummer, and he doesn't have a pocket per se in his truck, but he does he like keeps drumsticks between the cushions of his seat, so whenever he's at a red light, he will knock out a random cadence on his wheel.
And he did it better than I would probably say every drummer that we knew in high school.
Yeah, I mean, he's been at it longer. Not an old joke, but just true. But like you said, Father's Day is indeed coming up, and we'll reserve the actual Father's Day to celebrate our own fathers, of course. But in the meantime, Cole, I wanted to take this episode, the nerds that we are, to celebrate the fathers of fiction.
So like Hank Hill?
I didn't put him on the list, but I could have. I guess there are a couple, like... Yeah, there are a couple, like, adult cartoon dads I could have put on, like, American Dad specifically is in the title.
How dare you disrespect the propane and natural gas industry, Cadden? Don't you realize how important that is to America, Dallas Cowboys football?
I understand. But when we talk about, like, the actual way we're celebrating these dads, it'll be so clear why we couldn't include Hank Hill and his propane. Because today, we're celebrating these dads, how else, with a deathmatch of famous fictional dads. And if we included Hank Hill and his propane, it would just be too easy of a win. He just would toss propane tanks at everybody and they'd blow up on contact.
No. Hank Hill would probably be dead by just the first, like, 10 seconds. I think the best outcome...
Now who's disrespecting?
The best outcome I see of Hank Hill is that someone tries to throw a propane tank at him. He catches it like the great wide receiver he is, and then just somehow rotates it Olympic style straight back at them. But again, that requires a lot of animation, and I just don't think... Mm. Any of the animators for King of the Hill would be up for that.
No, true. It is a bad time to say I've never seen a full episode of King of the Hill.
That is egregious.
I'm sure it is.
King of the Hill is one of those, I would say, decently grounded Adult Swim shows that just made you feel content with, like, the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah. Not like Family Guy and American Dad when I was in, like, lower middle school and anytime Adult Swim came on after Cartoon Network every night, my brother and I would watch American Dad and Family Guy and, like, keep the Xbox on so we could very quickly change to the Xbox if we heard our parents coming upstairs so they wouldn't know we were watching adult cartoons.
Oh, yeah, no. King of the Hill is like a golden child compared to those shows.
I'm sure it is. It's not difficult to be less raunchy than those shows.
But all right, so if we're not going with Hank Hill, mm-hmm. and we're doing a death match, that means we're going to have to mm-hmm. go with Dads of Power.
Dads of Power.
So yes. I realized Darth Vader from the intro definitely has to be somewhere.
Spoilers.
But what other dads are known for just being that powerful? Especially the fight, especially the fight in the death match.
Yeah. What do you think? Are there any, like, I don't even like, not if, even if we're not talking about like power levels of these dads yet, we'll get to that. Usually we start off with the deathmatch episodes with, like, we did robots and wizards, and we talked about, like, the different definitions of robots and wizards. I don't think we can get much diversification in the definition of dad from any different dictionary source, but we can talk about that. Like, are there any fictional dads that come to mind as prominent badasses or just really good dads in your mind? And then we'll kill them or watch them kill each other, debate how they'd kill each other.
Fair enough. I'm trying to think of really good dads in fiction. Easiest one, not really a power level thing, but Pa Kent.
I was going to say,
in terms of fatherness, like, he would probably win the competition on fatherness.
I bet he could beat some people up.
So I would have to make the argument that if you are a father figure to someone who really never had a father, then you could also technically be their dad. So in that case, when I look at fathers of fiction or father figures, I would have to go Uncle Ben.
Yes.
'Cause again, Peter wasn't raised by his parents. He was literally raised, taught morality and ethics and how to live by May and Ben.
Yeah, two great examples of, like, pillars of morality, or the individuals who raised these pillars of morality in fiction.
Oh, okay. There's one I forgot the name, and I'm sorry to all of the fans of Lord of the Rings. I know that you will forgive me. You have Gimli's father, who was in The Hobbit.
Yes.
And then you have Elrond.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who basically led the elves at Rivendell. So those are big, like, fictional father figures that I can see. I would say that Superman could also serve as one, but, like, he's not always a dad. There, you know, he's a dad in certain stories, but now that I'm talking about a dad always, even to non-blood related children, Bruce Wayne, best father of all time, actually not second best father of all time in fiction. My dad's the best. But if we're going in fiction, it's Alfred Pennyworth for being the father to Bruce Wayne, and then Bruce Wayne for being the father figure to all of the Robins. Well, I just finished up on talking about how my dad is the best dad of all time, but if we're talking fictional dads, number one is Alfred for being the father to Bruce, while Bruce Wayne is second for being the father to all the Robins.
I suppose this is a much longer discussion than maybe we have time for in this episode, but fuck it, it's our show. Is Bruce Wayne a good dad?
Yes.
Okay. Most good dads wouldn't indoctrinate their adopted sons and biological son into a war on crime.
But here's the thing. All of his children, quote-unquote children, with the exception of Damian, who's actually his kid, all of them have basically revenge quests that they want to fulfill out. And he's like, I'm going to make sure that they take out their revenge quests and grow from it in a way that isn't going to derail their lives.
But Tim didn't have that revenge quest. He was like this Robin that stood out because he was the one who took on Robin, the role of Robin on his own. until, and he only got that tragedy of losing his dad, his actual biological dad, once he became Robin and Two-Face killed his dad.
Fuck whatever story you're talking about. I'm going to roll with the best Tim Drake origin story, which is from Batman the Animated Series, where that happened in exact reverse.
Maybe I'm misremembering the comic, but...
I would say in the animated series, his dad worked for Two-Face. His dad was dead. And then Two-Face came to kill Tim and steal whatever stuff his dad had taken from him. And then Tim found out his father's dead. And Batman said, all right, I'm taking you in. Didn't want him to be Robin. But then he said, I'm stealing the suit anyways. And he said, okay, fine. I'm going to teach you how to use it.
Well, I'm sure we can have a larger discussion on the morality of Batman. Ooh, that'd be a cool episode. I'm going to fucking write that down. The morality of Batman. We should make that a fucking episode.
I feel like we'd have to include the morality of Superman as well, just for comparison.
That'd be fun.
Probably also take the morality of Spider-Man, if you wanted to do that too. Because those are probably the three paramounts of how children were raised that informs how they became superheroes.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a fun episode. Look forward to that, audience. But yeah, all good examples of dads. Batman, we'll get to that question later, but not in this episode. But with that, I don't think I'll go into my examples of popular dads from fiction, because now looking at the list of dads I have compiled for this death match, these are all the only dads I can think about right now. So to avoid spoiling who we have on the list, I think let's just go ahead and jump on into the death matches, huh, Cole?
Let's do it.
Let's start off with round one. Starting off with the first match of Mr. Ping, the goose from Kung Fu Panda, the adoptive father of Po, versus one of your picks, Elrond.
All right, now this is an important thing. Are we going by how good of a father they were, or like a power level thing? Because if we're going how good of a father they were, I think the answer...
The answer's obvious.
The answer's obvious.
Okay, let's... You know what? I'm gonna make a copy of this list, and we're gonna do both. For each entry on this list, I like that idea. We're going to go through and we're going to choose one that would actually win in a fight to the death, and we're going to choose who's the better father.
All right, then I'll go ahead and just make this one quick and easy. Elrond wins the fight. The goose is the better father.
I will immediately agree with both. Mr. Ping... I think Mr. Ping is definitely the better dad. He never makes Po question his adoptive status. He accepts Po lovingly throughout his entire childhood, and he allows Po to believe in himself as the Dragon Warrior, accepting the fact that what makes him unique is what makes him special. The thing that makes him the Dragon Warrior is inside him all along. There is no secret ingredient to the secret ingredient soup. Mr. Ping is an excellent dad. Meanwhile, Elrond loves his daughter, but also would choose to keep her trapped in a specific lifestyle and culture of the elves rather than going off and making her own decisions. So he does it out of love, but would also keep his daughter captive until he has to be very heavily convinced, and also the world is actually ending for him to be convinced.
If I remember correctly, the one kind of thing against Elrond, I don't think that he was really for the marriage of Arwen and Aragorn, because I think in order for them to be married, Arwen had to give up her immortality.
Correct. He liked Aragorn, but he didn't want his daughter to, you know, face mortality.
Yeah, he was like, come with me to the Undying Lands. And yeah, I think that's kind of the only thing against him in that point, is he was like, I don't really care about true love. Why don't you be immortal instead?
Mm-hmm.
However,
yeah,
that man could fight. If he needed to fight,
yeah,
he could kick the goose's ass.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to, like, make an argument for Mr. Ping. Maybe he could. You know, Elrond seems like the kind of guy, as we've seen in his locking down of his daughter into said lifestyle, that, you know, he's probably very traditional, stuck in his ways, probably very stubborn, so maybe Mr. Ping could distract him mid-fight with some philosophical viewpoints on accepting your true self.
Cadden, I understand where you're going with this.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
And you agree, right?
There's a good chance that Elrond, as an elf, being all high and mighty, could have decided to be vegan. But I still don't think that would stop him from killing the goose, even if he couldn't eat it.
In The Hobbit, they are vegetarian.
I still don't think that would stop him from killing a goose.
No, probably not. They kill a lot of other people. And he's an intelligent goose, so I bet he'd be fine with it. Yeah, Elrond, he is centuries old. He's fought in so many wars. He's led his people into battle. He was on the steps of Mount Doom the first time Sauron was brought down. He climbed up Mount Doom with Isildur to try and throw the ring into the fire, even though he didn't just grab Elrond and throw him into the fire to stop the ring from escaping. Who knows? But yeah, I think Elrond, obvious choice. Elrond takes the fight victory, the victory in the battle, but Mr. Ping, definitely the better father. But with that, we can move on to round two, and that being, I didn't think this through entirely. This would be a complicated way to go through the list because we have different winners in different rounds, but that's fine. For the first little bit, we'll stick with the layout we've got. And that is, next round is Brian Mills from Taken, Liam Neeson, versus Peter Griffin. And I don't think, Peter Griffin's definitely not a good dad. Brian Mills is, like, in a similar Elrond way, does, like, want to keep his daughter locked up and locked away from the dangers of... restricted from the dangers of the world, and then the dangers of the world do come and kidnap her. But Brian Mills goes all throughout Europe to find his daughter and kill an enormous amount of people to do it.
I think
Mills is a better dad.
I don't even know why you're arguing on either of these. Brian Mills
really
sweeps Peter Griffin out of the water. Like, I mean, he blows him out of the water on both.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson would just kill Peter Griffin. Every situation, I cannot think of a situation where Peter Griffin would ever win this, except for if Peter Griffin maybe got him by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, he'd need to be stealthy as fuck. And Peter ain't that.
Mm-hmm. No, he would try to sneak up on Brian, but Brian Mills would just hear from a distance down the dark hallway.
You're right. That laugh would get Peter killed.
Yeah. Although, okay, here's where I stand with, I think we both agree Brian Mills is definitely the better dad. He goes through so much more effort to keep his daughter safe and then save her when she is kidnapped. Peter Griffin is terrible as a dad.
Are you trying to argue the fact that Peter could somehow win this fight?
I think it's closer than we think. If we go back to the episode where Peter fights the chicken, the amount of damage Peter can take is not insignificant.
I don't think it has anything to do with the amount of damage the man can take. I think Brian Mills would just, he knows how to kill somebody quickly.
Brian Mills would just shoot him in the head. Yeah, you're right.
And even then, I feel like the opening of this fight would have to be Brian Mills saying, you know, I will find you and I will kill you, to Peter. Peter won't even know when the man shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, Brian Mills' particular set of skills will just have mm-hmm. him showing up at the most random fucking point and blowing Peter's head off.
But do we want to consider the fact that Peter was involved in the, I was going to say production, siring birth of Stewie? Peter's genes had something to do with Stewie coming into existence, the genius, psychopath, murderous 5-year-old, or however old Stewie is. Eh?
I can't even give him that, man.
No? Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I just wanted to have the conversation. I think it'd be closer than we think. I think Brian would underestimate Peter, think Peter's somebody he can intimidate like he does in the first Taken scene, the first Taken movie, and Peter would have a chance to get a few licks in. But yeah, I think Brian would kill Peter in an array of quick cuts and shaky cam.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. Brian Mills takes it as dad and killer. But moving on to round three. Next up, we have Mufasa from The Lion King versus Bob Parr / Mr. Incredible from The Incredibles. Any opening thoughts, Cole?
I think this is the closest fight so far.
I think so.
And I'm going to be pretty awful on this, but I think there's a clear winner for Best Father.
Okay.
And I think it's Mr. Incredible.
Really?
I think it's...
You think Mr. Incredible's a better dad than Mufasa?
Look, Mr. Incredible is objectively the better dad because he's not dead.
Okay. But Mufasa... Okay, Mufasa dies saving Simba's life. He is literally prepared and then executes on dying for his son. He is prepared to die for Simba and then he dies for Simba. That is literally, genuinely, undeniably the ultimate degree of dedication you can show to a loved one. And beyond that point, he's a great mentor to Simba. He sees Simba doing wrong and disobeying his orders, but he never gets mad at Simba. He uses those moments to make it into a teaching moment for Simba, meaning he's not like an overly aggressive father. He's more focused on teaching Simba how to be better and more mature and eventually allow Simba to grow into the king of the jungle that he is. And Ghost Mufasa comes back in the sky, in the clouds, towards the end of the movie. And he's the one to, again, convince Simba from beyond the grave to go back and take up his place as king and dethrone Scar. He is the ultimate inspiration to Mufasa. Also, he's voiced by James Earl Jones.
You do have that correct. I do think James Earl Jones is a big bonus to this. I think I could be...
No offense to Craig T. Nelson, you're great.
I could be swayed towards Mufasa. Sorry, that's just a bit of my personal prejudice coming out towards Lion King.
Okay. What do you got against lions?
It's just a general thing. I'm not a fan of The Lion King. I haven't.
We'll talk about that later.
I haven't liked it since I was a kid. So, Mr. Incredible comes from a better film.
They're close. I won't say it. I don't. Okay.
I do have to give you the point, though. I think I will go Mufasa, the better father.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure that Mr. Incredible did consider at some point maybe cheating on his wife.
Yeah. I was going to bring in that, yeah.
And leaving his kids to basically go on some sort of like fantasy superhero tour to reclaim his forgotten glory.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that point. Mufasa is a great dad, overall. Mr. Incredible, Bob Parr, is a good dad throughout, but he's going through a rough time. He's going through his midlife crisis after we see him at the start, and then we see him at the start as, you know, a young Mr. Incredible with, you know, and then the superhuman, not superhuman registration act, that's Marvel, but the supers have to go into secrecy, have to go into hiding, and he goes into his midlife crisis, and he's going through a rough time, but he lets his own problems affect his dedication to his family and his kids, and he starts to neglect his kids and only see reason to praise his kids when they display actions that he thinks are impressive, tying back to himself, like when the only time he really takes interest in Dash and his, you know, goings on is when he, you know, tells a story of how he went so fast in class and nobody could see him, and that's the only real time he praises Dash is when he displays actions that are in line with his own priorities. He does, of course, become a better dad when he realizes the mistakes he's making and is ignoring his family, and realizes how close he was to losing them when he thinks he loses them in the plane missiling. But yeah, Mufasa's just never a bad dad. He's a strong dad throughout. He's a constant source of inspiration during his life and after his life.
Yeah, I think that because Mufasa was basically without fault,
yeah,
he wins the dad competition.
Yeah,
I do think
now we're going to beat each other up.
I do think though Mr. Incredible would win the fight. I think it's the closest fight, yeah, because Mufasa is literally a lion, and a strong lion at that.
Yes, King of the Pride. Yeah,
but if Mr. Incredible can beat up that Doc Ock four-armed bowling ball twice,
oh yeah,
I think we gotta give it to him. I think that bowling ball was so much of a harder fight than going against a lion.
I think you mean the Omnidroids. But yeah, I have to agree.
Omnidroids, bowling balls with faces, same thing.
Yeah, Mufasa is the most even display of power that we have seen so far. Mufasa is a lion. If Mufasa went against, you know, our previous competitors, he would have stood a much better chance. But Bob Parr, he can lift trains. He can, you know, punch rocks out of the way. He can do a bunch of other superhero, super strength stuff. He would punt Mufasa across the savannah.
He really would.
Yeah. So we'll give the fatherly victory to Mufasa and the more head-to-head victory to Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible. And that will bring us to our next round, and that is Professor Utonium from Powerpuff Girls versus Professor Henry Jones from The Last Crusade.
The professor from Powerpuff Girls is a better father than Henry.
Yes, definitely. I don't think that is arguable. I think Professor Utonium shows nothing but love for his creation/daughters.
Henry definitely gives off the vibe, especially in The Last Crusade. And I'm not speaking bad about Henry's character. The Last Crusade is the best Indiana Jones movie ever made.
I agree.
However, if that man thought there was a possibility that he could steal a woman from under his son,
yeah,
and sleep with her, he would.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Even a Nazi.
Which I also think was the plot. I'm pretty sure that he had ended up seducing her before Indy did.
Yes.
Which, power to him. I mean, he was James Bond.
Yeah.
In terms of power, though.
I think we will give it to Professor Utonium for the dad. He shows nothing but love and support for his daughters. Henry Jones, both professors, I just realized. Professor Utonium and Professor Henry Jones. Henry definitely is, in almost a similar way to Mr. Incredible, to Bob Parr, is neglectful of his son, focuses more on his work, only really praises Indy when he, you know... You left when you just when you were starting to get interesting. That kind of stuff. Like, he only really recognizes Indy when, you know, he aligns with what he agrees with or what he supports. He doesn't recognize Indy's achievements outside of that, and has to be forced into realizing that he loves his son and cares for his son and wants his son to be safe and successful after he thinks his son has died and the tank rolls off the cliff and whatever.
Hold on. We are neglecting one very important thing here, though.
Go on.
Is that Henry's son is Indiana Jones.
Is Indiana? Yeah.
So, like, was he a great father on normal father standards? No. But if he had been a better father, would Indy have become Indy?
We're in a dangerous territory of excusing... parental neglect.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I think we could easily argue that Indy, we could have gotten a more well-balanced Indiana Jones should he have had a more attentive, caring father. Maybe that would have been less interesting to watch, but it would have been better for Indy's mental health.
Very true. However, I am going to throw a wrench in this. We agree that the professor from Powerpuff Girls is the better father. Agreed. I think that even in his old age, Henry Jones Sr. would win the fight.
That is where I was leaning. He fights Nazis. He's clever. We see him, like, use his umbrella on the beach to scatter the seagulls in order to blind the Nazi ship that's coming, the Nazi plane that's coming in. He's clever. He's a good combatant. He fights like a Nazi or two in the tank when he's captured, and Indy has to go and save him.
The amount of times that the professor has been, was it Professor Utonium or Plutonium?
Utonium.
I would always forget that. But Professor Utonium, the amount of times that he's been kidnapped in that show.
Yeah. He's a brain. He's not. There's not much in the way of brawn for Professor Utonium.
Yeah. Even though Senior had been kidnapped by the Nazis, he kind of seemed like he had a plan going.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Professor Utonium does get kidnapped by tougher villains than Henry Jones does, but Henry Jones also manages to fight back more than Professor Utonium does. Professor Utonium has to get saved by the Powerpuff Girls more than Jones does.
Also, the health benefits of the Holy Grail.
He takes a shot to the gut and survives quite a while Indy goes to retrieve the Grail.
That is some constitution.
That is tough.
So yeah,
I don't think Utonium could deal enough damage.
No, Senior, even in his old age, would kick Utonium's ass.
Yeah. Professor Henry Jones in the Bout of the Professors takes the victory. But Utonium, still the better dad. And next up, we have another of your favorites, Cole. Can you guess?
Well, Vader hasn't come up yet. Is it Vader or Batman?
It's not Vader nor Batman. It is Jonathan Kent versus Marlin from Finding Nemo.
Jonathan Kent's the better father. I know that's going to seem like a terrible answer given our whole Mufasa, the sacrifice, the journey.
Well, yeah.
To protect their children, especially with freaking Liam Neeson. Pac Kent's a better father. Jonathan Kent raised a god.
I mean, yeah. Marlin does stick his fishy little neck out way stronger than Jonathan Kent ever does, crossing an entire ocean to go find Nemo, But Jonathan Kent, even in the canons where he does die at Clark's younger age, like in the first Christopher Reeve movie, when Pa Kent dies when Clark is still in high school, I think. Even then, the representation of how good of a father Jonathan Kent is can be seen in how good of a person Clark and the Superman is throughout the rest of his life, despite the fact he got so comparatively, relatively, little time being raised by Pa Kent, Jonathan Kent.
Again, he raised a god.
Yeah.
Also, this is so lopsided on the fight. It's a human versus a goldfish.
Well, hey, I mean...
clownfish. But clownfish, still, yeah. Human versus a clownfish. Kent is stomping Marlin's ass in both of these.
Well, okay, let's examine this. For this fight to take place, Marlin could not take the fight onto land, so in order for the fight to take place, it would have to be in some level of water. So, Marlin has home field advantage, if nothing else.
What could he even do?
Not a lot. He's more maneuverable than Pa Kent.
Stop trying to defend this.
He has to. I'm not trying. I'm just extending the episode, Cole.
You're trying way too hard to make a fight believable that is absolutely a smackdown.
Well, he Marlin has to like dodge through all those sea mines to get away from the sharks, from Brucey.
Look, this
is very maneuverable.
Look,
he has to like encourage the rest of the fish to swim down.
Look,
and
this,
you know,
this
break
fight,
the net at the end.
Look, this fight is between two good fathers. I think about this like Harambe versus the one child who fell into his zoo pit. It's a fight that we know Harambe would easily win.
You mean because he had home field advantage?
We just don't want to see it happen. But in this case, I wouldn't kill Jonathan Kent to make sure it didn't happen. In this case, yeah. Harambe goes ham.
Yeah.
Also, rip Harambe.
I think you remember the story of Harambe very differently than I do.
I would say it was.
I don't think there was ever a fight going on.
It was never a fight. It was a kid fell into the Cincinnati Zoo thing,
yes.
And they basically said this kid's in danger being around all these gorillas. And it wasn't the fact that the gorillas would try to kill him. It was the fact that they were so goddamn strong that if they played with him like they did a baby ape, the kid would basically have his arm torn off.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So they said the best way to do this is that, I guess, Harambe was the one that wanted to play with them. And they said, we need to, you know, take him out so that we can get the kid out. Again, they murdered a best boy to help out the four-year-old. Do we all hate it? Yes. Do we wish it could never happen? Yes.
You think that kid ever got bullied for being the one who got Harambe killed?
Absolutely.
Probably. To somebody, right? Somebody found out. Somebody in high school found out and bullied that kid. I hope not. Nobody should ever be bullied. Bullying's bad. But I bet...
But... He got Harambe killed.
The ghost of Harambe watched over from heaven and forgave him, I'm sure. But yeah, I do think Jonathan Kent would win. Like, Jonathan Kent... Jonathan Kent has gone fishing before. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. All right, who's next?
Yeah. Sorry, Marlin. You were probably the weakest link on this chain. Now we have Darth Vader. Now it's his time. Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker, Scourge of the Galaxy Far, Far Away versus Scourge of the Tri-State Area, Dr. Heinz Doofenshmirtz. Huh?
All right, I'm about to throw out probably the hottest take of the episode.
Okay.
Other than my takes on The Lion King, Dr. Heinz Doofenshmirtz is a better father.
Oh, yeah. Fucking Heinz never cuts off Vanessa's hand and tries to, like, strong-arm her into ruling the tri-state area with him.
Okay, so hold on. You gotta think about this. That robot hand, with the amount of grip strength that you could have in that hand, it's basically better than a human hand.
Don't excuse cutting off your child's hand.
He cut it for the upgrade. He knew the upgrade was coming. He got it and said, hey, this is going to be our father and son bonding moment. I have a robot hand. You have a robot hand.
No. This is just a moment of a dad going, I played football in high school, so you're going to play football in high school. I have a robot hand, so you're going to have a robot hand. It's not healthy.
I mean, sure.
But Dr. Doofenshmirtz is a great dad. Heinz is a great dad. Maintains a healthy enough relationship with his ex-wife so that Vanessa can grow up in a semi-stable two-parent household or two-household situation. Is a homeowner. Owns that building, shockingly enough. Where he got the money for that, I don't know. Selling his Innators. But is always supportive of Vanessa, tracks down that last remaining doll for Vanessa, blasts that guy who's flirting with her to an alternate dimension to protect her.
And canonically gets along with her future husband.
True. Loves Ferb. Everybody loves Ferb.
Everybody loves Ferb.
Yeah. Dr. Doofenshmirtz, for sure. Better dad. Also, we're talking a lot about Darth Vader's relation to Luke. His relation to Leia, probably considerably worse, blows up her home planet, or is complicit in the blowing up of said home planet. Tortures her! Tortures Leia with the torture droid to get the information out of her in A New Hope.
Fair. But think about it. Did George Lucas actually know that Leia was going to be Darth Vader's daughter when he made A New Hope?
He had no way in hell did he know that. I had the plan from the whole time. That's my George Lucas. But there's no way in hell that he had that planned out.
Fair point. Also, just for the plug again, remember, if you haven't seen it, biblically accurate George Lucas, look it up. Forward it to George Lucas. I'll leave that there.
George, if you're listening, you're still invited on the pod.
Here's an issue I have, though. Even though we've decided Heinz is going farther in the father off.
Yes.
I don't know if Darth Vader wins, like, the actual death match straight up.
Really?
I feel like it's definitely more likely that he does win. Probably like a 70-30 right now in my mind. But with the different amount of Naders that Heinz has, I don't know if one of those would just work out.
I mean, but the whole idea of them, I guess I was going to say the whole idea of them is that they never work. I guess they do work.
They all work.
The shenanigans of Phineas and Ferb somehow pull them away, or Perry the Platypus hits like the single self-destruct button or turns the innator back on Doofenshmirtz. So I guess they do actually work really well. So if Perry the Platypus is not involved and this takes place in a galaxy far, far away, or a galaxy halfway between far, far away and Earth, then I guess on an even playing ground, and the innators do work.
All right, here's going to be my caveat on it. I think that Darth Vader will move on in the death match. That's my vote. However, I have to put the caveat of if Doofenshmirtz was given prep time before this fight, not coming in with like a Naders that we know he's previously built in the series.
because they're all destroyed.
Then I feel like, given that prep time, he would be able to come up with some anti-Vaderinator.
Yeah.
That would somehow either interact with the metal or make sure that the lightsaber could never turn on, or he just figured out a way to give himself the Force. Either way,
like a rustinator to like rust up Vader's suit.
Exactly. But I do think that he would need the significant prep time of knowing his enemy, which I don't think that we can assume for any of these fights.
No.
So I think Vader moves on.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked a lot about Doofenshmirtz's capabilities. We haven't talked. We know Darth Vader and what Darth Vader can do. He can pull starships down with the Force. He's one of the most powerful Force users in history. He is a dangerous combatant with a lightsaber. Even in his old age, he's got enhanced strength with his mechanical enhancements. Yeah, Darth Vader is Darth Vader. And I think, honestly, even if Doofenshmirtz had the prep time to build an appropriate innator to fight Vader with his innators, then, like, how many times has Perry the Platypus won by, like, hitting a single self-destruct button or flipping the innator to aim at Doofenshmirtz instead, both of which Darth Vader can do with the Force?
Fair point.
Yeah. Closer fight than some might have expected, but I think the expected victory is, of course, Darth Vader takes the deathmatch win.
I think that Doofenshmirtz definitely had the easiest path to victory out of all of the losers.
I think he definitely has better tech when he has that prep time. He has the better tech than Vader, because, like, again, he builds, like, a laser that blasts people into another dimension. I think he's definitely got the better tech, better gear, if he has time to make it, but too many design flaws in said gear, even when working appropriately. But that concludes our first round of Father v. Fathers. Vaders v. Vaders. So, we can go ahead and jump into the second round, and we will start. This is where it gets complicated, because we had different winners. We can't go, like, straight across like we did with the death matches and the dad matches, because we have different winners for different sections. But we'll work it out. We'll work it out. We'll do it live. Next up, we have, on the death match side of things, we have Elrond versus Brian Mills.
If we think that Elrond's, like, ring to control the weather would stop Brian Mills, Elrond. If we don't think it does, Brian Mills.
Which elven ring did Elrond have?
He had the one that allowed him to control air and, like, control the weather.
Yes. Vilya. All right. So, yeah, he does have one of the elven rings. I mean, Elrond has a sick sword. He's got one of the rings of power. He's got immortality. He's probably taller. I don't know. I was going to say taller, but Liam Neeson is freakishly tall. So maybe they're even height. But Brian Mills has a gun.
True, but we've also seen the capabilities of elves firing off bows.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Elrond is going to be a lot more acrobatic and athletic than Brian Mills. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I do think we have to give at least some credit to Elrond's military prowess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. They're both like military personnel. Brian Mills is a secret agent. Elrond is a, you know, general and leader of Rivendell. Elrond, I think, does have the advantage in the athletic and acrobatic abilities. Probably the advantage in hand-to-hand combat. Probably the advantage in firearms as well, or ranged weaponry with his bow versus Brian's gun skills. And even if they got into, like, a bout of strategy and tactics and like trying to outsmart each other, because Brian Mills is clever, fooling the Eastern European individuals into giving him information and whatnot, even if this came down to a bout of intellect. Elrond just has more experience on him. He's just got more under his belt.
Yeah, I think the strategic prowess of if he knew he was facing him, he would know how to get under his skin, or at least his weaknesses. Mm-hmm. He'd find him out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
However, I know that... Well, I forgot Elrond lost in the first round, so better...
Elrond won in the first round. Oh, well, against... versus in the dad debate, yeah.
Yeah, so I think Elrond wins in the deathmatch debate, but who's up in the dad debate?
In our Dad v. Dads, we have Brian Mills versus Mr. Ping.
Brian Mills.
I guess I've not seen Kung Fu Panda 3 or 4, but I guess Mr. Ping never, like, puts himself at risk to fight, or risk to, like, save Po or anything. Maybe he doesn't
that,
in the third
so,
one.
So you've never seen the third one?
I've never seen the third or fourth.
Okay, so the third one is what is swaying me towards Brian Mills. Mr. Ping lied the entire time. The third one's basically, sorry, I'm sorry, spoilers, it's going to have to happen. Po's parents are alive and have been alive this entire time. And they basically gave him to Mr. Ping, and Mr. Ping has lied about the fact that Po's parents were alive the entire time, which you can kind of get why. But again, Brian Mills never hid that bad of a secret. Like, he only hid that he was, you know, some sort of crime-fighting CIA assassin agent thing because he literally had to. Ping went way too long without telling Po that his parents were alive. And they do reconcile at the end of the third one. You know, he's like, you're my dad. Like, he's my father, you're my dad. But still, Brian Mills.
Okay, so we have to balance out the value of supporting your son or supporting your child versus keeping your child safe. Because I feel like Brian Mills does a better job of keeping his daughter safe by going into Europe and saving her from the sex trade. But Mr. Ping...
He still supports his daughter. It's just the mother in the Taken movies is a bitch.
Is he supportive?
He is supportive.
If I'm remembering the first Taken movie correctly, like, he doesn't want his daughter to go on vacation and his daughter ends up having to lie about where she's going to get her dad to be okay with it, and then he finds out and gets upset with her, and that's when she gets kidnapped. That's when she gets taken. Dun, dun, dun.
I mean,
Mr. Ping also does want to... Mr. Ping at first does want to keep Po somewhat restrained in the noodle shop at the restaurant, but he never like tries to keep Po from following his dreams, really. And even like he even sees his son's achievements as a place of pride by like kind of twisting his marketing and his menu around having a son who's the dragon warrior.
I mean,
I'm leaning more towards Mr. Ping in this regard. Because I feel like Brian going into Europe to save his daughter is a good display of fatherly dedication and putting his own life at risk to save somebody he loves in his daughter, and then has to do it again in later movies. But I've like emotional attachment in the support in Mr. Ping's support of Po implies to me a more personal connection to his son, and Po eventually like we talk about Mr. Ping doesn't do like the physical support of like risking his life and whatever to save Poe in the same way Brian saves his daughter. But Mr. Ping doesn't need to. I mean, his son's the fucking Dragon Warrior. He doesn't need to put his own life at risk. Maybe that's an excuse.
I mean, look, I'm still going to go out to bat for Brian Mills. He saved his daughter from sex traffickers. He saved his daughter and his wife from more mob in the second movie. And then he basically becomes the only parent to his daughter in the third movie. And
that's true.
Yes, that is true. I was going to say his wife dies in the third movie.
I've not seen Taken 3, but I did know that.
Well, you're just not up with the lore, Caden. You need to be up with the lore.
Not. It's all these number threes I haven't seen.
But again...
But, yeah.
Brian basically proves that he is better than every other male father figure in his daughter's life. Repeatedly. So I'm still going Brian Mills, better father. I don't think you can hold the fact that they were a separated household with dual custody against him. And I think that's something that you're holding against Brian.
I'm not holding that against him. I hadn't thought about that. I'm not holding that against him because, you know, divorce is a thing in families. And you can be a supportive house. You can be a supportive set of parents while being separated. But I wasn't holding that against them. I'm still just leaning in Mr. Ping's direction because, like, Poe, I feel like Poe trusts Mr. Ping more than... I'm going to look up the daughter's name because I keep saying
Kim.
The daughter.
It's Kim. Kim.
Daughter in Taken.
I'm telling you right now.
I believe you.
I get why Mr. Ping is up there for you. But I'm telling you, even though he has this redemption arc that he has to go through with Poe in the third movie, because he lies, thinking it was protecting Poe, it still brings him a rung down.
And, okay.
He's still at the top, but he's just not the top.
Cole, have you ever played Skyrim?
I have not played Skyrim.
Okay. Do you know there's been a quote in like the last year or so going around socials from when you pull weirdly inspirational quotes from vague sources. There's a particular dragon in Skyrim called Parthenax, and he has one quote that goes somewhere along the lines of, "Is it which is better, to be born good or to overcome your evil through great effort?" And I feel like in this moment, I've not seen the third Kung Fu Panda movie, but going off your conveyance of Mr. Ping's story, I feel like this and Mr. Ping is embodied in this question of Mr. Ping has the highlights of being a supportive dad and supportive of Poe's pursuits, and if he did maybe he did make that mistake in keeping information from Poe, which, you know, neither of us are fucking parents.
So I have to ask though, what do you think the answer to that dragon riddle is? Do you think it's born good or overcoming evil with great effort?
I think, this is a whole question.
Because I get where you're coming from with Mr. Ping, but I think the problem that we're just not going to be able to agree on is I think we both have different answers to this riddle.
Okay, in the deeply, deeply philosophical debate of being born good or overcoming evil through great effort, in our nerdy little podcast about famous fictional dads fighting each other to the death, I would say it is better to overcome your own evil through great effort, because it is easier to be good if you are born into a nature nurture situation that feeds into your goodness. If you are born into some sort of demographic or background or upbringing that encourages bad behavior or bad morals, et cetera, overcoming that is more of a test of your own personal morals.
You son of a bitch. We have the same answer, which brings to my question. Brian Mills is that answer. Ping is not. How the fuck are you still getting ping?
Well, okay, because Mr. Ping overcomes his evil, Mr. Ping overcomes his faults, his evil through the evil, quote unquote, in this situation. The evil, the sort of bad choice he makes is keeping the information from Poe, and he has to overcome that and come to terms with the fact that Poe deserves to know that information in order to make his own choices. That is overcoming a bad decision, coming back from a bad decision you've made and hoping that your loved ones can still accept you, and hoping that your loved ones can, embracing the fact that your loved ones can make their own decisions and be their own people.
That is in no way the types of trials and tribulations that this fucking Skyrim riddle is talking about.
Well, I've not seen the fucking movie.
And because I have seen the movie, I'm still going with Brian Mills.
Fuck you.
You're not budging me on this one.
Should we roll for it? I have a d20 in my hand. Should we roll for it?
You motherfucker.
I'm kind of on Mr. Pink's side. Having not seen either third movie in either of these trilogies, I'm on Mr. Pink.
All right. Fuck it. I have a d20.
Okay. This is my bad rolling d20, so let's see what happens. All right. Roll. I got a 12.
14.
Fuck you. Fine. Brian wins. Brian's a better dad. All right. You fucking traitor D20.
All right. Your D20 moving realized on. I was right, but that's fine.
Shut up. Shut up. It's Chance. It's Chance and you know it.
It is until never I Chance.
Until I get the weighted D20s. You're going to give me weighted D20s for Father's Day, right?
I mean, no. How do you think?
No.
I say, you didn't think that I've toyed with Dicex long ago. I've been like, all right, all the computer D20 algorithms, how do you make this completely even and normal? And then said, how can I change it just so the algorithm says, give me more numbers above 15?
I hacked my Dice app long ago.
I said, right. never hacked Dice app, but Python can help you with many things.
Python's very useful. You know what else is useful? Deciding between the death match of Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible, versus Professor Henry Jones. I feel like this is a short debate. I feel like they're both from a similar time period where they could have both fought Nazis. Mr. Incredible probably did it better.
This is the death match, right?
This is the death match.
Bob Parr.
Bob Parr, yeah. Sorry, Hank. I think this is pretty obvious. I'm glad that we did divide it into the questions of better your death match versus dad match, because
it's a completely different bracket.
It's different brackets. It's different discussions entirely. Yeah, Mr. Incredible takes that fight. Do we know, like, how durable? Do we have any examples that come to mind of how durable Mr. Incredible is? He gets, like, thrown across the island by Syndrome, so he can definitely, like, fall from great heights. So, like, whatever fucking gun or whatever Henry Jones has, or umbrella or whatever, Mr. Incredible could definitely take it.
Yeah, Mr. Incredible's been shot at before, and, like, he doesn't have, I would say, superhuman agility. But, like,
yeah,
by virtue of him being a superhero, he has to at least be somewhat fit. So he does have above average agility.
Yeah.
To avoid someone who probably isn't trained to be a marksman.
Right.
So definitely still Mr. Incredible.
Yeah.
I think it makes it slightly more in Henry's favor if he has a gun. But
right.
It's still like, what, a 90-10?
Yeah. Because we can't say that he has the Holy Grail, because that gets lost in the temple. If you have the Holy Grail and just, like, constantly taking shots of Holy Grail water and just immediately recovering from each hit that Mr. Incredible gives him, then maybe he could outlast Mr. Incredible. But
that would involve the fight being in the temple. And again,
yeah.
I think he wouldn't even have to fight Mr. Incredible at that point. I don't think that Mr. Incredible is a penitent man. I don't think he'd get through the first trial.
No, he definitely wouldn't get there. I think he would get through the first trial, because the first trial is just razor blades coming at him, and we know. Well, I was just going to say we saw him fall from great heights, but he is also scared of the razor blades from the Omnidroid when the hands start spinning. So yeah, maybe he wouldn't get past the first trial. I was going to say he would not be able to think his way through the first trial, but maybe he could, like, brute force it. But he is scared of sharp, fast-moving blades.
And weirdly tar-like bubbles.
God, did that scene freak you out as a kid, too? Freaked me out.
Yes, that was a scene that could... I felt his lack of breathing in that scene.
Yes, it's coming from everywhere. The quick cuts, he's being surrounded and crushed by the expanding tar balls. Yeah, that scene freaked me out as a kid.
There was also the fact that scene pissed me off more than most, because there was an Incredibles video game where if you made it to the door, like, you couldn't get like a secret level or just win, because him getting gunned down was part of the movie, but you did get an extra life.
Oh, okay.
So that's my memory of that scene.
Well, Bob Parr could not make it through that scene, but he did make it through this round. He beats Henry Jones. He beats that old professor man to death. Next up, on the debate of great dads, on the dad match, is Mufasa versus Professor Utonium.
I'm gonna
go Mufasa.
I'm gonna give you Mufasa on this one. It's the sacrifice.
Yeah.
But more than that, the fact that it's James Earl Jones.
It's James Earl Jones. It'll be interesting. There's no way that we could go Jones versus Jones in this, because Vader won the death match, but Mufasa won the dad match.
I am so sad that we couldn't do that.
Yeah. We'll never know which one would kill the other. But, yeah, Mufasa versus Professor Utonium. Again, Professor Utonium is a good dad. He's supportive of his kids. He made his kids himself.
He just gets kidnapped too often.
Yeah.
He's putting his kids in danger.
I'm sure throughout the seasons of Powerpuff Girls, I'm sure he teaches the girls plenty of valuable life lessons, but none of them become, like, King of the Pride Lands, although they are superheroes, but they're also bratty superheroes sometimes. But they're also kids. But we also see the end result of Mufasa's parenting in Simba becoming a good leader and king and guy. Yeah, Mufasa's the better king. Better dad. Mufasa's ahead. And
now
next
who?
Up, Cole, you're going to have to break your own heart with either decision you make in this next death match. It is Jonathan Kent versus Darth Vader.
Death match or father?
Death match.
Darth Vader. I'm fine with not breaking my heart on this. It's Darth Vader.
Yeah. 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 Nothing really that could be done here.
Not at all.
Jonathan Kent. He's not super powered. He's a grizzled man. you know, probably a pretty fit, muscular man growing up on a farm, working a farm his whole life. But it's fucking Darth Vader. Yeah, pulling down starships. Darth Vader will crush Jonathan Kent with a tractor. Or crush Jonathan Kent with Kal-El's baby space pod.
Very true. However, since I know where we're going now...
Uh-huh.
Jonathan Kent may have lost the battle, but he's not losing the war. Because he's moving on in the father's bracket. I'm sorry, the Hinds.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kent's moving on.
Jonathan Kent versus Doofenshmirtz. Again, Doofenshmirtz is a very good dad. Puts himself through a lot for Vanessa.
Doofenshmirtz should have made it farther. But he only got put in the same part of the bracket as probably top two dad on this list. In my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, going back to like what we were saying about Mufasa, we see no matter how much in whatever canon we're talking about, no matter how much time Jonathan Kent gets with Clark, we know the end result of who that person is coming out of a childhood with Jonathan Kent. And it's fucking Superman. It is the picture of a paragon in any story. Yeah, Jonathan Kent passes on his wonderful moral values to his son, and he passes on to the next rung of this death match, or dad match. Not the death match, he's dead. Darth Vader killed him. But for our next round, we go back to the death matches for Elrond versus Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible. Okay, we're getting closer. We're getting closer in terms of power level. Elrond versus Bob Parr.
I think this is going to be closer to a 60-40 in favor of Bob Parr, because I don't I don't think that Elrond's Ring of Air is actually going to have any capabilities that would stop Mr. Incredible. And I don't think that Elrond's base fighting skills, especially with the superhuman strength, like, Bob basically just has to get a hand on him, and then Elrond's grappled, he has no use for the weapons anymore, he just won't be able to slip out.
Okay, let's examine what either side is bringing to this. Elrond, as we said, has the Ring of Power, whatever wind-based abilities that gives him. He's got finely crafted elven equipment in his armor and weaponry, his short-range swords, and his long-range bow. I would say he's probably more agile than Mr. Incredible. Mr. Incredible is more of a brute force. Elrond would probably be more elegant and spinny aroundy. So he could, I would bet that he is the ruler of Rivendell. He's probably got the best equipment in Rivendell. I would bet if Mr. Incredible can be cut through with something like the Omnidrones, or Omnidroids, whichever it was, the big Doc Ock ball. If the big Doc Ock ball can cut through Mr. Incredible or pose a threat in that way, I would bet Elrond's sword could cut through him. And if Elrond can move around quick enough, I bet he can get in some cuts on Mr. Incredible. Mr. Incredible, of course, probably definitely higher durability than Elrond, even with Elrond's big good super elf armor. And he's probably more durable. Again, probably his best test of durability is getting flung at high distances. So we've got someone who's directly stronger and more durable versus someone who's quicker and more agile.
Yeah, it's a pretty even fight.
Yeah, I think so. I think the initial reaction to go with Mr. Incredible, but it is closer debate upon examination. Here's where I'm at with it. Also up for consideration is Mr. Incredible does have Edna Mode's suit, which is also adding some durability. But, excuse me, but I would presume that Mr. Incredible is significantly more durable than Elrond, and even if Elrond can zip around and take more and get in more hits on Mr. Incredible, I would bet that Mr. Incredible can take more hits while Elrond tires himself out moving around. Mr. Incredible can take more hits and is probably going to take more hits. Mr. Incredible only really needs to grab Elrond once, like you said, get him grappled, get him locked down, and then chuck him.
Yeah, and at that, it's just kind of the question of, you know, how close will Elrond let Mr. Incredible, or how many rain shots can Elrond get off?
Mm-hmm.
And
Mr. Incredible also has some degree of range himself. He can, like, throw big rocks at Elrond, right? He throws rocks at the Omnidrones. Omnidroids. Fuck, what was it? Omnidroid. Yeah, Omnidroid. He throws big rocks at the Omnidroids. So that's a ranged attack. I'd probably even say a more dangerous ranged attack than Elrond's arrows.
I mean, I'm looking at the different powers of Elrond just to make sure I'm not going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Elrond is gonna have better aim with his bow in hitting Mr. Incredible. But again, Mr. Incredible can probably take more hits, and he only really needs to land one good hit with a rock or a grab or a punch. I'm leaning in the direction of Mr. Incredible.
See, I was Mr. Incredible at the start.
Oh?
I think I'm at Elrond now.
Explain yourself.
So he has healing magic. He can heal himself.
Okay, he has medicine magic. We see his sort of healing abilities when he heals Frodo from the Morgul Blade.
He has basically a 9th level D&D spell at free use. Now, he doesn't decide when he uses it, but I think we'd have to take that into account that he probably would have gotten some sort of prophetic vision with his foresight on how this fight would have gone. I think he would come in knowing Mr. Incredible's weaknesses. I don't know. I can't think of them other than him just being a guy.
But what weaknesses does Mr. Incredible have? He's just a guy. He just doesn't have any, like, kryptonite or anything like that. Elrond's not going to go after his family. His family's not here. It's just a fight between these two.
I think Elrond, the foresight is what swung it for me.
The foresight is notable for sure, but he doesn't control his visions. He just gets visions randomly because, like, Eowyn or Arwen, the two women, Arwen has to, like, ask him at a certain point, like, "You had a vision, didn't you?" kind of thing, which implies to me, I don't have that extensive of knowledge and detail on Tolkien lore.
He doesn't control it. So I guess that is a fair
question. He doesn't control it. Yeah.
That is a fair question. Do we want to assume that in this death match, as part of the match, he would have had some sort of prophetic vision of how this fight goes? Then I think it has to go to him.
Sure. For fun, yeah. Okay, but, like, knowing that it... Cole, I'm gonna punch you.
Just...
What are you gonna do about it?
Nothing.
Knowing that something is going to happen does not translate to your ability to solve it. Like, if we both had Spidey sense... If we both had Spidey sense from Spider-Man, we don't have the agility or the super strength to... avoid whatever car is about to run into us or whatever meteor is about to crash into us or whatever black gooey monster alien is going to come out from that meteor and attach onto us.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Elrond may know how the fight's going down.
Fine.
That just may lead more to his dread that
then
he's going to get
we'll give
sucker
it
punched.
To Mr. Incredible.
Well, I guess he can't get sucker punched if he knows it's coming.
You want to go ahead and finish out the deathmatch side while we're here?
I think that's right. I think it's true. No! Brian Mills or Mufasa? I think Mufasa.
You're going to hate me. I'm going to go back to my initial argument. Brian Mills is better because he isn't dead.
He's an inspiration! I would argue that leaping into a canyon of wildebeests is a more dangerous situation than anything Brian Mills does.
But Brian
and
Mills
Mufasa
was
does
able
it
to save his daughter
sight
multiple times.
For Simba.
Mufasa could only save Simba
and
once.
Kimberly isn't inspired by Brian. Kimberly doesn't go on to be king of the Pride Lands.
I don't think you're taking the right lessons from the Lion King movie. I think that
you don't like the Lion King movie.
I think that Simba's biggest inspirations were Timon and Pumbaa.
I think his biggest inspiration is probably Rafiki, because Rafiki is the one who is to like balance him out.
Either way, we've just named three inspirations more than his father.
No, not more. Maybe more, but not more. Rafiki's the balancing act between the two sources of inspiration. And Mufasa is the one who has to get his son back, to encourage his son to believe in himself and get past his guilt in order to accept his responsibility as king. And Mufasa's not just a father to Simba, he's a biological father to Simba, but he is a royal father of the Pride Lands.
You know what, Cadden? Just because I'm so kind,
I hate you.
I'm going to let you have this one. We can move Mufasa ahead only because I know he's going to lose.
Fuck you. Don't give me your pity vote.
Well, you're getting it.
Okay. Did I do this wrong? Why are we uneven? Mr. Incredible moved forward. Darth Vader did not move forward. Oh, okay. No, I'm right. Okay. Yeah, this is just the last round for both. Yeah. Back to the death matches. Bob Parr versus Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, it's not even a question. Darth Vader was the strongest out of any of these.
That's why I put him last.
Yeah, they're Mr. Incredible would not stand any shot. He has to go up against the Force.
Okay.
Don't you in any way try to defend this?
I'm making this more of a discussion for the sake of content, Cole. We're gonna have to break down the mechanics of the Force at least a little bit. We know from Yoda that size and physicality does not matter in the face of the Force. Do or do not, there is no try. The size of the TIE fighter, or the X-Wing, does not matter in Yoda being able to lift the TIE fighter. TIE fighter, not fucking TIE fighter, X-Wing. So, but does Vader accept that, or does he rule the Force, use the Force by means of straight physical power and force and rage? And if it's that latter option where he is using the dark side of the Force that is more physical and primal and aggressive, does that mean Mr. Incredible's super strength gives him a fighting chance against like any force pushes or anything like that? And does his like increased endurance give him any resistance to the force choking? Do you see where I'm at with this?
No.
Fuck you. Play along.
It's hard for me to play along when it's such a bullshit argument to trying
Fuck
to keep
you.
Bob Parr alive.
The Force is bullshit. I'm not trying. It's for content, damn it.
Look, Bob Parr, two things. Assume Vader doesn't have the Force. Lightsaber. Gonna keep Bob at a distance. That lightsaber is gonna do far more damage than a gun, a knife, or any other weapon that exists in the Incredibles universe.
Okay, then if in this hypothetical Darth Vader, if we're counting out his Force abilities, then...
Take all the Force abilities away. He doesn't need the Force.
Again, Mr. Incredible, throw big rocks from distance. For Darth Vader, the Force is his best long-range ability.
Cleave rocks with lightsaber.
Throw bigger rocks that can't be cut through with lightsaber. Throw rocks that are too big to be cut through. Bob could do that.
All right,
Bob,
fine.
Bob, punch ground and break ground so Darth Vader fall through. Darth Vader can't fly. Darth Vader, I would argue Mr. Incredible has a slight advantage in agility over Darth Vader. Darth Vader is clunky and more of a brute.
Okay, I agree with that. I don't think that Mr. Incredible is near as strong to break open solid ground to that scale. I think he basically just kind of is throw big rock. Look, taking away the Force, yes, does it become a much more even fight? Could Mr. Incredible win it? Yes. But the Force exists, and no matter how he gets the Force, Darth Vader will kill him.
I mean, I know, but I just wanted to have a fun conversation. Fuck you.
Look, what I honestly want to hear you ramble on about right now is how Mufasa is somehow the better father compared to
Fuck you, we're not done
compared
here.
To Jonathan Kent.
We're not done here.
We are done here, Caden.
Engage in my conversation about the Force. What do you think about the Force? Do you see what I'm saying with like Darth Vader focusing on the physicality of the Force rather than the mental over physical side?
Oh, yes,
like
yes.
Like Yoda did?
Yes, yes. I 100% understand perfectly. Your philosophy on the Force is top tier.
Don't think you do.
You should become a new writer for Star Wars.
I would. George Lucas, come on the show. We'll talk. Fine. Darth Vader moves ahead. It was all as he was always going to. Darth Vader wins the deathmatch. As he was always going to.
Now, I'm not going to speak for this final round for the Father's Day one. Convince me.
Okay. Jonathan Kent does raise Superman. That is a strong point. Mufasa, every point I've made about Mufasa still stands. And we can even go back to the debate of born good or overcome evil. I would say the fact that Mufasa's teachings, the fact that Mufasa's lessons to Simba are still able to bring back Simba from that heavy place of self-doubt and disregard of his responsibilities says a lot about how strong his teachings are for Simba and teaching as a father overall. Because again, the teaching, Jonathan Kent from the start raised a son who also did face adversity in having to learn how to control his superpowers as a young Clark Kent. And if you go by like Zack Snyder's interpretation or stuff like that.
We are not talking about Kevin Costner's Jonathan Kent. Take that out of your mouth.
You're afraid now. You're afraid of the interpretations.
Take everything about the Man of Steel's first like 20 minutes past the point where you find him on like an Alaskan fishing boat. Mm-hmm. And throw it out. The worst rendition, I personally think, of a Ma and Pa Kent was that movie. Not because Sally Field isn't amazing. Sally Field was a great Ma Kent. It was just
That's
the fact
not
that...
Sally Field.
It wasn't Sally Field?
That's not Sally Field. Sally
Who
Field
the fuck
is Aunt
was
May.
It?
Sally Field is Aunt May in Amazing Spider-Man.
Damn it, I get them so confused. Who was Ma Kent?
Diane Lane. No, who was it? Who was it? Fucking Man of Steel.
I think it is Diane Lane.
It is Diane Lane. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Diane Lane. We forgot your name.
Diane Lane, I am so sorry. But again, still an okay part of that movie. Sure. I think that talking and taking this Pa Kent interpretation and using Kevin Costner is a mistake.
If we're taking the characters in general, Kevin Costner is in there.
If we're taking the
characters... Mufasa, we only have two interpretations, and they're basically the same character.
But one of them is live action.
And debatably, it's CGI. It's made to look live action. But we're not getting into that.
And did that movie make anybody happy?
No.
Exactly. So I'm going to say that Kevin Costner and Jon Favreau's Lion King cancel each other out.
I can shake on that.
So, okay. So who is your take on who the better father is, Cadden? Am I just asking you to defend futilely? Do you believe that it's Jonathan Kent, like any sane person would?
Fuck you. As I was saying, with like the idea of these fathers both provide teachings to their sons that not only make them into good people, but also bring them out of situations that could have made them into worse or more tortured people. Mufasa gets Simba to look past his guilt and still try to do right by the Pride Lands, and Jonathan Kent gets Clark Kent to look past his differences and, you know, embrace the abilities he has and what he can do how he can use them to make the world a better place, and et cetera, et cetera. Honestly, these two, it's not an easy debate with these two, because if we look at, like, again, if we're looking at the outcome that we know that these parents had with their children, Simba does become a strong, noble leader of the Pride Lands, and Superman,
after having Superman, basically three surrogate fathers.
Timon and Pumbaa are his best friends, not his father figures.
Timon and Pumbaa are the gay couple that raised him.
I'll accept that. Happy Pride.
You seem so deep in thought.
I am deep in thought. Superman obviously becomes Superman. But if we're looking also like the struggles that Simba and Clark Kent, Superman, face later on after having taken on their father's teachings, they both still show areas of imperfection. Like if we look at the DC Animated Universe, there are points where Superman lets his aggression and his own shortcomings for, like, on Darkseid cloud his judgment when Darkseid comes to the Justice League for help and Batman has to tell Superman to cry me a river because the mission is more important, and Simba in Lion King 2 has to overcome his biases against the other lions that followed Scar. Okay, here's a point. This is going to be a long fucking episode. Here's a point. Simba flat out loses Mufasa, and after Mufasa's death, only gets one vision from Ghost Mufasa in the Ghost Cloud Sky Mufasa, and after that, it's Simba on his own, just working with the lessons that he has always been taught by Mufasa, and he lets that carry him forward into the rest of his life. In, I would argue, most, Cole, tell me what you think about this, most interpretations of Superman, Pa Kent is still around. Like we talked about the Christopher Reeves version. We talked about the Christopher Reeves version where he dies.
Most interpretations, he is dead at this point.
Okay.
But he did last a lot longer. Most of the interpretations have him surviving basically all of his adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And like dying in like the first like few years of him becoming Superman kind of thing.
Okay.
Because he did turn into a Black Lantern, in the Blackest Night comic series. There was a mini arc of Superman where Jonathan Kent and a few other undead basically took over Smallville, and I believe that Kara and Connor.
Oh yeah.
Basically,
who's
had
Damian Wayne was with someone.
Damian Wayne. So he is dead in most of them, but he didn't die in the same timeline as the Christopher Reeve or the Zack Snyder version. He did live longer.
Right.
And again, I think part of the thing for me is that Jonathan Kent was literally raising God. Like Superman to the people on Earth basically is worshipped. Like, he is probably the strongest superhero that exists on Earth. And I think that Jonathan Kent is the better father because he had to make sure that this being who could basically snap any human like a twig treated them with the respect that humans agree that they deserve. And he had to humble this godlike alien being.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
It came with the job. I was going to say, Jonathan Kent had a far harder job than Mufasa ever did. Mm-hmm. Now, is Mufasa the only one that pulled the great sacrifice? Yes. But think of what would have happened if Jonathan Kent wasn't as good of a father as he was. Think of where the DC universe could have gone. I mean, we've looked at Superman Red Son, right? When he's dropped in the Soviet Union. Like, look what happens when it's not the Kents. I think that Jonathan Kent is one of the paramount reasons that Superman ends up having the morality that he does in his backstory. And I think you really just have to talk about how they end up. Like, Simba is, you know, king of the pride. He was born into it. He honestly was not completely raised by Mufasa. Like, most of his childhood, at least I'd contend from what I remember, took place outside of the pride. So I think that given how much Simba had to learn from Timon and Pumbaa and probably Rafiki, other figures, because his dad was not there to raise him, even though his dad gave the sacrifice. I just don't think it stacks up to Jonathan Kent taking on the job of saying, "Don't worry, Earth, I'm going to humble God for you."
That's a fair point. The sort of direction I was going in with the question of how many interpretations have Jonathan Kent surviving a longer time is Simba, like you said, only had a relatively small amount of time with Mufasa, but the lessons that Mufasa taught him were still such a foundation of who Simba is as a good person and a good king. So, even in that limited time, Mufasa was able to squeeze in so much so many good morals and lessons on Simba. But, and on the other side of it, rather, on the other side of it, Jonathan Kent, if he is still alive into Clark's adulthood, like in the DCAU or Injustice storyline, he's around longer in Clark's adulthood. It's often seen like Clark will go back to, and in the latest James Gunn Superman as well, with David Cornsweet, Clark often goes back to Jonathan Kent as a source of inspiration and mentorship, basically, and advice. So, like, you, with that in mind, you could argue that Mufasa maybe built a stronger foundation with Simba, and Jonathan Kent is a good father, but Clark still has to come back to him over time. But all that being said, you make a strong point with the difference in pressure that was put on Mufasa and Simba versus Jonathan and Clark. Mufasa was the king of the Pride Lands and sort of left that position to Simba, which is, you know, he's a king. He has his people to look out for and whatever. But Superman is just on a different level. You're right. He is a godlike figure that people, especially if you ask Zack Snyder, praise as a god, as a savior, as a holy figure. Like, you can literally be anything. You can be anything to us in terms of, like, governing or having us worship you. And he chooses not to. He chooses to look past what he can do and focus more on what he should do. And I would probably agree with you that that is a heavier burden for Clark, and it is a burden that Jonathan Kent has more success, maybe not more successfully, but equally successfully walked Clark through. And if they have equally succeeded, but one has a harder task, I think it's a fair argument they have to give it to Jonathan Kent.
Thank you for finally coming to your senses.
Don't even making me regret it.
But I'm glad. So we have Darth Vader as the strongest, but Jonathan Kent as the fatherliest.
Yes, the most fatherly. I think that both of those answers fit very, very well. When I was picking out figures and options and brackets for this death match and now dad match, I wanted to find figures who in their stories are very much defined by being a dad. Mr. Ping is almost solely a support figure for Poe's story. So much of Elrond's personal story is wrapped up in Arwen. Darth Vader's most famous fucking line is, "Luke, I am your father," or "No, I am your father."
Thank you for the correction there.
I got you. But yeah, I wanted to make sure all of our options here were fictional figures, characters who we know for their roles as father and how badass they are. And I think we debated all of that fatherliness and badassness accordingly, because, as we said at the start of this very long episode, we wanted to celebrate the struggles that go into fatherhood and the joy that we get from our time with our fathers and the life lessons they teach us and the arms that they don't cut off.
Exactly. And while we're kind of wrapping up, I do want to give a shout out to a few different things. Kind of my Father's Day playlist in terms of movies. If you've never seen it, Tim Burton's Big Fish, okay, I believe, is a must-watch on Father's Day. I will say I cried watching that movie. It was very emotional. But I think that it is definitely one of the best father-son relationship movies out there. I would also like to point out, because we didn't get to talk about Bruce Wayne and Alfred, The Dark Knight Rises, Christopher Nolan. I was just going to say, if you look at Alfred and Bruce as a father-son relationship,
for sure,
the last 20 minutes of that movie fucks you up.
Yes, certainly.
And I can't really think of any other big father-son things. Oh, if you want to know how good a father can be, so much so that they put their child, well, they didn't put their child, their child decided to put themselves on like a 30-year revenge quest, then you can always watch The Princess Bride to just hear the immortal lines.
Yep.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Oh, you know what we should do for next Father's Day is we should do Deathmatch of Famous Sons.
That would be fucking epic.
Oh, that's good. Inigo's got to be on there.
But yeah, so I just wanted to highlight those three movies if you're looking for a watch to watch with, you know, your dads or your sons or, you know, any other mix of the family.
Mm. And let us know what you're doing for Father's Day. Let us know in the comments. Or if you're watching this after Father's Day, what did you do for Father's Day? My dad likes M&Ms, so his Father's Day will probably involve something about M&Ms.
Well, Cadden, it has been a long episode.
Yeah, we gotta get the fuck out of here.
You ready to sign off?
Get us out of here, Cole.
All right, everybody. Great time. I hope you guys will catch us next week. But for now, I'm Cole Browning.
I'm Cadden MacArthur.
And this has been Unquestionably Nerdy. Have a great Father's Day.
Have a good Father's Day.